Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast, a Saturday edition of the show, mostly because my life is just chaos right now. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Mackowitz. How you doing, Bob?
I'm good, Matty. We tried to get together a couple times this week, but you've been here, there, everywhere. Why don't you tell the people what you've been doing? Tell me what you've been doing. I don't even know.
Well, the main problem is that when your partner works in film or on TV, the schedule is all over the place. So Amy is doing on-set medic stuff and first aid and testing for COVID. And it's just, you're on for 8 days, then you're off. And the schedule is never a week in advance. It's like in Fast and Furious, where you're living a half mile at a time, or whatever that expression is. So Amy, So Amy doesn't know, and then she works for 8-9 days, and then suddenly has a couple days off, like more than two in a row. And so we go up to the cottage, and then we come back. And then the other day, my car, I got to take it in, but they need to keep it for a couple days. So it's just, and then I'm doing some stuff with Euro, filling in a little bit on the morning show. So last week or so, Bob, it's been a big to-do.
Well, good for you, though. Just, you always take life as it comes. That's your nature. Whatever it is in front of you, you adapt and you do it. I think you see things as temporary, and I think you see things as, I'm not saying necessarily like half full versus half empty optimism. It's more just sort of like, it is what it is. And let's just do what it is. It's a really good way of looking at the world. Film is crazy. I'm glad Amy's doing it. Like, it's a fun gig. But the few times that I've actually worked in film, it is the most intense of all the experiences in show business, with the possible exception of the Olympics. Film is like a summer thunderstorm. It's just so intense, and then it's over.
Yep. Actually, summer thunderstorm, perfect way to put it, because we had hail. We had hail yesterday in this city, and it's the same thing. It's lighting, sound, lighting, sound, lighting, sound, craft table, and then suddenly, boom, here we go, everybody, go.
The thing, there's kind of a, you know, there's two, when you were a kid, there were two ways to study for exams. Some kids studied an hour every day for a month, and some kids studied 14 hours for 2 days, and Phil is the second kid.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a right or wrong. Like, you and I have always done daily TV or daily radio. That's the hour a day. You learn, like, you adjust a little bit every day. You tweak here, you tweak there. But you can't get too high or too low because you got so many to do. Film is nothing but intense. It's cool. It's cool. It's hard to sustain, but it's cool.
You're right. It is this intense moment, because also you only have so many hours with the crew, because then there's overtime, and who knows if you're doing an outdoor shoot, you only got so much permits and the sun. Like, literally, the sun can be your friend or your enemy.
I, on the other hand, have had a pretty quiet week, but last night at about 7:45, something happened at my mother-in-law's house that will forever be known as the dog incident.
Oh, what?
Okay, so Opal is mischievous. Opal's a bit like Santa's little helper. She even looks a bit like Santa's little helper. And I think we're kind of like in the episode where Homer's going to get rid of the dog unless it learns how to sit. She's not open to suggestion, like most Mackowitzes. So she loves to chew stuff up. We have her up there at my mother-in-law's place. We're having dinner. She goes into the onto the patio and brings back a stick. And the stick was going to be used for the tomato pots. And she chews up the stick. And Gina is livid. Livid. She ruined one of her tomato sticks. Look at the mess. Okay, so that's just the setup. A couple hours go by. And my wife and I are watching the hockey game about to start. And we notice the dog's chewing something. And we look. We're like, what's that? And then we both realize with horror, oh, no. It's an Italian playing card.
Oh, no.
The dog, they had been playing cards in the kitchen. I guess the dog had just hopped up and grabbed a card off the table. Maybe it fell on the ground. We'll never know. But there she was, chewing the three of swords. And we took it out of the mouth, and the corner had been ripped off. There's something you have to understand. My mother-in-law, two things here. One is, she does not spend money on anything. You know what she was doing when we came by to visit her yesterday? She was washing.
Can I guess?
Yeah, sure.
I was going to say, was she washing Ziploc bags to reuse?
Oh, my God, Matt. She was washing Ziploc bags to reuse.
Yeah!
She actually was. She was washing and drying Ziploc bags to reuse. The olive oil container, like the little spout that we have on the table when we eat, is from her hair dye. She didn't throw it out because she realized she could put olive oil in it and use it as a handy kitchen spout. So she doesn't like to waste money. The other thing is she loves cards. She loves cards more than she loves her children. She loves cards more than she loves religion. There is nothing in her life that takes the place of sitting down and beating someone at cards. And this was her favorite deck, and the dog ate the three of swords.
Oh, no.
So we walked in and showed her the card, and she's always, like, so happy, so friendly. Oh, you know, Nona's so sweet. Not anymore. Now it was all business. And she turned on my wife in the biggest way. You didn't train the dog. Your dog's an idiot. Your brother Dan's dog would never do this. She got even meaner. She starts going, you dress like a farmer.
Oh, see, there's so much here. One, the deck is ruined because now you know what card that is. Even if you don't see it, you know what card that is. But she did, your mother-in-law, she did the ultimate. She dog-shamed. She's like, your other sibling, their dog is well-behaved. This dog is a symbol of your lax attitude towards everything.
That's exactly it. And that's where it's, you dress like a farmer. It's like, you don't even care enough to take care of yourself. She was walking through the house. I just hear the dog walks into the kitchen where she's sitting alone. I just hear, get out! She threw her out of the kitchen. She looked at my wife. She just waves her hand in disgust and says, Cinque dollar, $5 to buy a whole new package.
Oh, no.
Of cards. So it was determined that buying her a new deck will not be enough. We're going to have to find another deck that also has a three of swords, steal that, and give it to her. And it has to have the same back as the one that, like, is the one of that belongs to her deck now. Like, there was the corner was sitting on the floor. She was stewing in the living room. We were watching the hockey game. And Opal had the shredded corner was sitting on the floor. And me and my wife had to slide over carefully and grab it off the floor so she didn't see the remains and get wound up again.
You were like trying to hide the body.
We were burying the body. And I actually, on me right now, I have the corner in my pocket. And I'm going to keep it on my desk from now on. Because it's a reminder of the dog incident. Sandra was laughing. We were laughing on the way home. It's like, you just know. It's like 9:27 while we're recording this. She is phoning all of her friends to tell her what this dog did.
Now she's not even.
Oh, yeah.
So good.
Well, Bob.
Yes, so that's where we're at.
One final thought on this, and well, we'll get to sports. It's Saturday. It's a different edition of the show.
Oh, my God. I have so many non-sports questions for you.
Perfect. Well, I've seen other Lokis, by the way. You're now experiencing my older brother, Scott, and his wife. They've had two dogs. The first dog they had, Karma, was the very sweet, polite, lovely, loving dog, but really misbehaved when it comes to food. We've seen the dog knock over a giant bread holder, like wooden, beautiful bread case, knock it over, break it up just to get day-old bread. And their new dog is the polite one that does nothing to no one. And they are so relieved that at our cottage, they no longer have the possession of the bad dog on the island. There is pressure that comes with that.
So much pressure, Matt. And now, like, we can never, ever, ever live this down. This, no. Like, every time Opal ever goes over there, it's going to be like she's a ex-con on parole that moves next door. You know, like, she's always going to have this stigma attached to her.
Yeah.
Unfairly. Listen, I feel like she did her time.
Yeah, Bob, Opal could spend a couple years in jail, go to rehab, speak at schools about the dangers of drugs and crime and getting in with the wrong crowd, has a job now, also works at a nonprofit. But every night when your mother-in-law sees Opal, doesn't see all the good things that Opal has done since.
Greatest exchange in my family's history. My wife to her mother, "You told us to get a dog," which was true. My mother-in-law to my wife, "You look like a farmer."
Please tell me though, Sandra was wearing like just the suspenders.
Yeah, like the overalls.
The overalls, thank you.
Yeah, no, she was wearing my Muskoka, Canada t-shirt,
mm-hmm.
and a pair of yoga pants and a fanny pack. So, you know, Gina was right.
That's not a farmer.
You know, I started calling my wife Pearl Jam. Because, like, during COVID, it's like, what's the comfiest thing I can wear? And everyone's walking around the house like it's a 1992 Pearl Jam concert. Flannel, yep. Some kind of cargo shorts. Grunge never died in our home.
Now I'm just thinking, if 17-year-old me could see what girls at my age at 17 were wearing in 2021 versus 1992, the 1992 version of myself is like, we must invent a time machine.
It is. We grew up in an interesting time, Matt. We grew up in an interesting time.
Indeed.
Hey, everybody. Let's cloak our physiques with baggy clothes. Yeah. Okay. Hey, I got a couple of sports questions for you.
Yep.
We can either do hockey, or I suppose we could jump ahead. I do have a basketball question, but, you know, we can maybe save that till next week once the finals set. Let's do hockey. How impressed have you been by what Tampa is doing versus how disappointed have you been that Montreal really hasn't been competitive in three games and now they're looking at a sweep?
I'm not disappointed at all in Montreal. This is what I expected. I said Tampa would either sweep or it would be a gentleman's sweep. I gave Montreal no chance to beat Tampa. None at all. What Tampa is doing is so remarkable, but let's just get to the main guy. And by the way, if you don't have an answer for this, because I don't, do you have an equivalent of Nikita Kucherov? No regular season and the clear best player in the postseason. Where does this exist?
Yeah, that's a good one. You know, Patrick Kane missed a lot of time a little bit ago and came back for the playoffs and kicked butt. Usually we're used to the Riley Nash story where a guy comes back and he's not that good and you can't really use him.
Yeah.
This is different. Kucherov has been special. He's also been exciting. That he scored a beauty last night. I can't tell whether or not I'm cheering for Tampa because of the cleverness of how they buried his salary. And basically, you know, like as Torontonians, we have nothing to say about cap circumvention because Brandon Pridham's pretty good at it himself. This is a big one.
Yeah.
This is a big one. Like, I don't know. Is it asterisk worthy? I don't think so.
No.
It's pretty close. It's pretty close. No,
well, the thing though is Tampa is so good. Like, it's almost the tip of the cap to how good they are and how good their cap is that they're like, Nikita, don't worry about it. We know we're going to make the playoffs. Hell, they had like 20 plus more points than Montreal, and they didn't have Kucherov at all in the regular season.
You know, for Leafs fans, for particular Leafs fans that were looking for a way for Montreal to get knocked down a peg, this was the only option left, was for them to get swept. And it looks like it's probably going to happen. There was one game in which Montreal was pretty close. That was the second game, but the other two haven't been especially close. Tampa has not only felt like the better team, they felt like the dominant team. I think we all expect something special happens in game four, it'll be a sweep. So I'm happy for all the Leafs fans that needed for Montreal not to make this close, because it wasn't. I feel bad for Carey Price because as great as he played, all we're going to talk about it is his save percentage in the finals being in the eights, which seems like a cruel fate for someone who carried a team for three rounds. But, you know, that's sports. You know what I'm getting out of Tampa, though?
What?
Because everything always comes back to what's this got to do with the Leafs. The Leafs could never have beaten this team.
Never.
No. Like, if they played 100 times, Tampa would win that series 70 times out of 100. I don't know if they're the best team in the cap era. I think that's probably still the Chicago Blackhawks when they were really at their peak. But they're right up there. Like, I watched last night, this is an easy game to play when the team's looking good because everybody looks good. But even with the guys out of the lineup, it was like there's no holes in this roster. Like, everybody is good. You know how when we look at the Leafs and you go, not sure what I'm going to get out of that guy, or that guy's kind of disappointing, but I think we can, you know, have this particular player cover off that weakness. There's just none of that with Tampa. They all do something, and they're all good at it.
Tampa is so good. I don't care about Carey Price's save percentage. I went back and watched a bunch of those goals. Too many of them were two-on-ones where it would be hard for Price to do it. Like, Tampa is so good. I think they overwhelm any goalie. And you're right. In terms of the salary cap era, you can quibble the Blackhawks. Maybe you go the Penguins. But everyone's coming back next year. Kucherov, there is 14 players currently in the NHL who make more than Kucherov, who's under contract until like 2027. So by then, there won't be 14 players who make more than Kucherov. There'll be 40. So not only is Tampa going to sweep Montreal, they're going to be favored again next year. And then depending what happens with Braden Point, we know what's going to happen. He'll ask for less money than Marner just to annoy us. But this Tampa team is like when people say, oh, Montreal's got to turn the puck over less. How? Tampa turns it over. Eventually, you have to be aggressive to try to score on them. And every time you turn the puck over, they score on you.
It's a great point. It's like watching a fight and saying, the guy just needs to be punched less. How? The other guy throws punches really quickly. He's not trying to get hit. He's doing what he can. It's just they're overmatched. In some ways, I feel, using the boxing analogy, I was thinking about a boxing analogy for Tampa coming into this. The one knock against them as the Cap super team is that now they'll have beaten Montreal, who look very, you know, they looked invincible against Winnipeg and against Las Vegas. They look vincible against, they're very vincible. And then it was Dallas previously and the weirdness of the bubble. So I was almost thinking they're like Lennox Lewis, where you look at Lennox box and you go, this would be a great heavyweight in any era. Unfortunately, in his era, there was nobody really great to fight. I feel that way about what will be the two cup wins for Tampa, assuming that Tampa wins this one, barring a miracle, is we'll go, they're a super team. Kind of wish they would have had a knockdown, drag it out brawl against the team that was pretty much as good as them.
No, that's a good point. Yeah, like the only thing missing is they don't have an equal on the other side. You're right. And a lot of that's just for us as sports fans because we want to see it. The pushback is Tampa's been kicking the crap out of everyone for so long now. But you're right. Yeah, it would be nice to see that true opponent, but they have 69 wins in the playoffs since 2015. That's 27 more than the next highest team. Thank you, James Myrtle, for that stat.
I was going to say, that's a great stat. There's no way you did that counting. It was Myrtle who did it?
Yeah. Nope. That was James Myrtle. Shout out to him. That's why everyone should get the Athletic. But both, by the way, Bob, in the end, both points are right. The only thing that's taking any shine on Tampa is they didn't have a true worthy opponent in the finals, but they also been kicking ass for like the last 6 years.
And they played hard. They played a really close, tight, good series against the Islanders. And maybe this is just going to be like the old Super Bowls from the 90s, where whoever won the NFC title game wound up to be the champion. And you would have those epic battles in the title game. And then once you were conference champion, basically cruised to the end zone after that. So maybe it'll just be like that for a few years. I don't know. Yeah, I think that's all I got on hockey, to tell you the truth.
That's enough.
I got one more hockey question. It's not really hockey. It's hockey adjacent. What do you think of ESPN's lineup?
I'm you know what the main thing is? I'm just bummed out that Ray Ferraro isn't on overdrive every day.
Yeah, I know. That's a big loss for the city. It was the best segment in Toronto radio.
Yep.
Except for your opening thought, Matt, which I'm sure is very good.
I don't mind making it a close second.
It's a real loss. They had amazing chemistry. He's a unicorn of an analyst. There's nobody better. ESPN's very lucky to have him. I'm happy that Cassie Campbell Pascal is doing stuff with them. I think she's really good. I'm trying to think of other people. John Buchagross, I really like.
I hope he does well. He will. I mean, Buchagross is just very creative, talented, and loves the sport. And if any guy deserves a bit of an elevation, maybe a little bit more profile, I'd be happy if it's him.
So here's what I wonder, and here's what I don't know. I have my doubts, but here's what I'm wondering. In the other sports, the way the Americans cover them has generally raised the game of how the Canadians cover them. ESPN, football in general, is covered so well in the States that I think there's a lot of inspiration that TSN took for its CFL coverage. And its CFL coverage became outstanding. But I think that it was helped because the bar was raised. You could see down south, damn, that looks good, or damn, that's done sharp and smart. You know, we got to be that good. And we've never had that in hockey because the Americans' hockey coverage was always anywhere between piss poor to satisfactory. And what I really hope happens, and I'm not sure it will, but what I would love to see happen is that there is a crispness to the presentation of hockey on TV in the States. And this is probably more directed towards Hockey Night in Canada, which still feels kind of like a CBS 80s sitcom to me. that they take that and raise the bar. You know, like, I think it's always good when a new entrant comes in because there's the opportunity for it to be good. And when something's good, other things have to keep up. I hope that happens.
Yeah, that's, you know what, I hadn't even thought of it from that perspective, but you're right. Because they'll come in, TNT and ESPN, they'll spend a bunch of money, they'll try things. Some will work, some will fail. And then whether it's TSN, Sportsnet, CBC, whomever, that there's things they can learn from it. And it's like everyone's game gets raised. And you're right. That's just the natural human way of doing it. I can't wait for PK Subban to retire because he's going to be a star. I love Stephen A. Smith talking hockey because he's honest about it, but at least he approaches it with energy and fun. So, you know, there's a lot to like.
It's interesting that you mentioned the Stephen A. Smith thing, because I wonder to what extent Canadians will accept the opinions of people who didn't come up in the traditional way. Historically, that's always been a tough sell up here. You know, even within the hockey world itself, if you didn't go through all the steps people usually go through, should I really care what you think?
Yeah, I don't know if that's just a Canadian thing. I think it's a sport thing. Look at how suspicious MMA community is. Good friend Adnan Verk was doing wrestling, and you know the guy was going to put all the work and time and the charisma into it. He didn't last that long. I think it's if you are in the SEC network, you better not have a British accent, and if you're covering soccer, you better not sound like you're from Alabama. I think just as sports fans, we always have suspicion from the person that doesn't seem like they follow the game as closely as we have.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny. And even if they have followed, if they're not the kind of person that usually talks about this, you and I love Tony Kornheiser. Love. Yeah. In a lot of ways, when I was on the air, I took a lot of inspiration from Kornheiser because I thought, if I could be really good at this, I bet I would be a Kornheiser-type broadcaster. He was literate. He was worldly. He was kind of pop culture and goofy. He didn't take himself too seriously, but he was a good analyst too and a hell of a writer. And I thought, you know, that's, if I can get this right, I would want to be like that guy. And he did Monday Night Football and it didn't work. And it's not like Kornheiser didn't have his sports bona fides. Like, he's legitimately one of the great sports columnists of the last 50 years, but he didn't seem football enough. And it's funny how that works. I mean, that's why I wonder. I looked at that thing with ESPN. I wonder if people will take this seriously because it's ESPN and ESPN doesn't do hockey.
I think for a lot, and it'll be predictable. A lot of the more older, traditional, conservative hockey fans, they're going to turn their nose on what some of ESPN does, just like we did when Fox with the laser and the robots and the glowing puck. And you know what? To me, that's fine. If you like it a certain brand and you don't want it to change, the great thing is there's plenty of options out there. What I'm curious about, how's Wayne Gretzky going to do?
Yeah, that's such a great question. I feel like we don't ask it enough. He is our, like, people obsessed over how A-Rod would do or, you know, some of these really big figures, but A-Rod's not Gretzky. I mean, Gretzky is like if Tom Brady went into the booth And it's almost like maybe because it's, do you know what I think the answer might be why we're not more curious? Because it doesn't matter because we're prepared for him to be Wayne.
Yeah. Like,
whatever he does, it doesn't matter. He's Gretzky. It's like it's like being Vince Lombardi. Like you're just on the other side. You're in the ideal of something and nothing will ever touch that.
And he's with TNT. I don't know how much he's actually going to be doing, but I think a lot of it is, I don't think anyone expects he's going to be great because we just don't expect him to take chances, to not be afraid of being critical. And we don't need him, like, you know, we don't need him to be Charles Barkley on day one. I want to learn something and I want to be compelled. And I don't know. It's like, I've never seen evidence that Gretzky can be that guy. It doesn't mean he can't. I haven't seen the evidence of it.
Well, he's waiting on money for the league for a long time. Maybe we can get angry Gretzky or sign up Lemieux, like bone to pick Lemieux, the one who said, what the hell's with all these idiots clutching and grabbing me? Like if we can just get angry Lemieux, just get him a deck of smokes and send him out there and let him air some grievances.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what we need. Oh, man. That's what TSN needs to do right now is find out who's the angriest hockey player, the one who feels like he was ripped off the most. By the way, I have to say this. I wasn't going to say anything, but I am going to say it, so F it. Last night, Ron McLean was wearing a light blue suit, like a kind of a pastel blue suit. And Elliot was wearing a purple suit. Cub Koskis was wearing a purple suit. David Amber was wearing a green suit. And I looked at these and I thought, these are all suits that George would have worn 6 years ago. These stupid assholes ran him out of the game because he dressed up like the players did. And in classic fashion, 10 years later, they catch up and go, look at the new thing we're doing.
Bob, you're 100% right. We talk about this once a year or so. Just, you know, much like with Kornheiser or Dennis Miller, except for the difference is that George has got more hockey knowledge than Miller had with football. They set him up to fail. And it was a wasted opportunity. You're 100% right.
And by the way, I should say, when I say these assholes, I don't mean these guys individually, because I really like David Amber a lot. I don't know Elliot super well, but I like him and I really pull for him. And he's with Merrick. And the better Elliot does, the better my boy does. And so, you know, I'm 100% there. I don't like Ron, but that's immaterial to the point. The point is the people who are running the shop, who let these guys maybe express a little individuality. Like Elliot's hair, seriously, like he looked like Jack Nicholson as the Joker from the neck down and Mark Bergevin from the neck up. You know, like they were so repressive about how you were supposed to look. And now like BX is allowed to have some fun and, you know, like they're opening it up. But it's funny because I guess they just had to open it up on their terms with their guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Who knows? Anyway, the point was I did have a good laugh as I looked at it yesterday and I thought, and it was really Kyle Bukauskas' suit that triggered it for me. It was like, that looked like a combination of something that Strombo and Cebulski would wear.
Yeah.
And both of those guys always caught a hard time for being too young or too just outside of the norm, you know? So yeah, shout out to my boys.
Hell yeah.
We've talked a lot about hockey. I got some non-hockey questions I could throw your way. I spent a little time this week. I thought we were doing the show earlier in the week, so I wrote some stuff out.
Do it.
You ready? You ready for some non-sports?
Hell yeah.
All right. Somebody offers you a barbecue plate. Plate A, and this is assuming everything on the plate is well made, okay?
Okay.
Plate A is a burger, potato salad, side of chips, and a good glass of red. Plate B is grilled salmon, grilled asparagus, a light tossed salad, and a good white. Which plate do you accept?
I take the burger because salmon, I'm not a big salmon fan. Even well done, I find it a little bit boring. And it's barbecue and potato salad. I'm taking the burger 100 times out of 100.
I'm 100% with you. And let's get into this, which I consider to be the fallacy of salmon. Salmon is one of the most overrated, fancy entree options there is. It's kind of bland.
Yes.
People always like, ooh, I'll get a nice piece of salmon. Really? Is there a nice piece of salmon? It's a little tasteless. And not even the texture's that great. There are other fishes that are good. No. Grouper, for example.
There's so many better fish. Salmon is kind of like chicken. It's there. It's bland. You know what you're going to get. You know what salmon feels like? Salmon feels like compromise. Salmon feels like I better stick with my diet. Salmon
That's
feels
exactly it.
Salmon feels safe. The only time salmon is good in a really fancy restaurant and it's miso flavored, sesame seed infused, brah, 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 you've done the Picasso of salmon. It's the only way.
That's actually a really great point, is that something about miso makes salmon okay. Yeah, that's a really good point, Matt. Okay, you have two VHS tapes and there's a house fire and you can only grab one. The one that you save, you keep. The one that you lose is gone forever.
Yeah.
The first one, and this is in honor of Mel Brooks turning 95 this past week. The first one has Blazing Saddles and Young Frankenstein on it.
Yeah.
The second one has The Producers and History of the World, Part 1 on it. Which tape do you save?
Ooh. I'm saving Blazing Saddles and
Young Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Young Frankenstein?
Young Frankenstein? Yeah, I mean, I mean, option C, I throw myself in the flames because I don't want to live in a world where I can't hear Springtime for Hitler. But if I've got to choose and to somehow move on with my life, I'm choosing the first VHS tape.
This was a really tough one for me. I actually oscillated back and forth because I think Blazing Saddles is a masterpiece. And I think Young Frankenstein is an underrated classic. But I think the best of those four options is The Producers. And I'm like you, like, I can't live in a world where I can't watch The Producers. I think it's like one of the top five funniest movies ever made by anybody ever, maybe top three. And you know me, I'm all about the elite. I'm all about the cream rising to the top, Matt. That's my shtick. So I got to take the one with The Producers and History of the World on it.
There's no wrong answer. In the end, I'm still also going to have, you know, never mind that shit. Here comes Mongo.
So good. Well, and it just like, you know, the Gene Wilder performance is so brilliant. Okay, because it's a Saturday morning and because we're doing this from home, I apologize for that, but I got to run and take care of something, Matt. Can you do Jeff Pollock for about 90 seconds and I'll be right back?
Of course I can. Bob, you go and do what you got to do. So we here at the Macko and Cause podcast, we got a sponsor. And our sponsor is Jeff Pollock, and he is our lawyer. Let me get the information out of the way. JeffPollock.com. That's the website. JeffPollock.com. That's Jeff with a G. And the phone number is 416-777-0088. 416-777-0088. And I say this all the time, and this is not like some sort of script. Like I've got to follow these key talking points. The main thing is, in life, you're going to need a lawyer. Now, when you're younger, you might not need a lawyer. There's many good things about being younger. One, you're not worried about the health of your family or your parents as much. Then you get older, and now it becomes an issue. Another thing is, eventually you're going to need a lawyer, whether it's you're buying property, you're fighting with someone because they're putting up a fence in the wrong way on their property. You might need your will, corporate, commercial, real estate. At some point, you're going to need one. I think that getting a lawyer is always going to make you feel insecure because there's always, you know, the tropes of the evil, bad lawyer. Well, you're not going to get any of that with Jeff. He is a friend of ours. Like, we were debating yesterday on text about, Jeff was angry because we denigrated the peach, and I will continue. I'm not going to denigrate. I'm just not a big peach fan. Anyway, the point is, if Jeff's your lawyer, I can't tell you how it's going to turn out in terms of the results, but I can tell you, you're going to have a peace of mind. You're going to be relaxed. It's like, you know, the milk still has two more weeks before expiration. You feel good about your milk, whether it's in your tea, your coffee, your cereal. The one thing you know, dairy's got your back. Well, Jeff Pollock also has your back. Are you back, Bob, or do you want me to, I can continue to, you know, to vamp for a little bit longer? I take it by that silence, I will. So yeah, I mean, that's really the main point of all of this. It's same thing with an auto mechanic. Ooh, I wonder, what is better to have in life? Your trusty auto mechanic or lawyer? I mean, the answer is probably lawyer. But the worst thing is, and I had to take my car in yesterday. You know when you get the lights that come and buzz on your car and you have no idea what they mean? Now, Bob won't. I don't know if he's back yet. He can't.
No, I just walked out. I got my headphones on now. I don't know what you're talking about, but I bet I know what you mean.
Yeah. No, you don't. I was actually debating what's better, to have a good mechanic or a good lawyer. It's obviously better to have a good lawyer, but ask Sandra, the insecurity when a warning light comes on your car when you're on a highway and you don't know what it means.
Right. I have a good moment from last night. I'm watching Yesterday with my daughter on Netflix, and the dad is driving the car and the little girl's in the back, and both of them are singing Faith No More's song, Epic. You yep. want it all, right? And Charlotte, she's cuddled in my arm. She goes, "That's like you and me, Dad, except for the driving."
Yes.
And who did I think of right away, Matt?
Yeah.
My pal, Mr.
Carl. This is a compliment. Your daughter's a little shit.
Oh, my God. She's such a provoker. She's such an agitator. Oh, my God. It's so true. I asked her. I said to her, because I could see it coming, right? I said, Charlotte, tell Daddy the truth. Do you think when you get back into school for grade 6 that you're going to be a class clown? She's quiet for a second. Then she goes, maybe. So that's where we're at. This is the summer of maybe. Okay, I got some more questions for you. Ready?
Do it.
You meet two talented youngsters as kids, and one of them says that they want to quit show business. They're both really good at what they do. One of them, though, wants to quit show business and to get a normal job. One of them is Steven Spielberg. The other one is Keith Richards. Which one do you convince to stay in showbiz?
Oh, fuck, Bob. What are you doing? What are you doing? This is going to shock you.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to go with, I want Spielberg to stay in entertainment.
What's your reason?
At the very least, like, you had Brian Jones, and maybe it changes the course of history. And I think Brian, and if there was no Keith, maybe there would have gotten more out of Brian Jones. Maybe it would have changed that. And maybe Brian and Mick and whoever was the you know, replacement, average replacement level guitarist that took over for Keith Richards. I think I would do that. I'm not feeling good about this answer, but that's the answer I'm going to give.
So I'm with you on this, but here's what it comes down to for me. It's totally selfish, but Spielberg made two of my five favorite movies in yeah. Raiders of the Lost Ark and, of course, Jaws. And Jaws at any given time might be my favorite movie. It could be The Godfather. Sometimes these things move around. I'm not necessarily saying the greatest movie ever made. I think the most fully realized piece of cinema ever made is Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey. But in terms of what gives me the most pleasure, I could literally watch Jaws every day. There have been months where yeah. I have. Thank you, AMC. Now, as much as I love the Stones, it's not the same, you know? And then I started to think, but Keith is rock and roll. Like, it's not just that Keith is, you know, one of the greatest rhythm players who ever lived, and he wrote some of the greatest songs, and what he had with Jagger was irreplaceable. But it's just Keith, right? Like, Keith is rock. When you were a kid, weren't you just fascinated by this guy who couldn't die?
Oh, yeah. All the pictures. The one where they're on the road, and he's, like, in white, and he's got the cigarette out of his mouth and the cigar, and just... And God, what was the sign he was standing next to? I think like no trespassing or something. But anyway, yes, Keith Richards is rock and roll.
Keith Richards launched the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise with Johnny Depp's imitation of Keith Richards as Jack Sparrow. It's just, but in the end, it just can't top Jaws. You know what, Keith?
You know what,
gonna,
Bob?
Keith's going to need a bigger boat.
Keith Richards is rock and roll. Steven Spielberg is my childhood.
That is so good. That's a good way to put it. Very poetic. Okay, speaking of not poetic, open-toed shoes in the city in summer, yay or nay? Men.
Nay.
For men.
Nay. Nay. 100% nay. What are you doing? Have some self-respect.
Okay. I kind of agree, which makes me nervous. But I can always tell a cause rant coming on when you start to get the Mulaney creeping in. What are you doing? Have some self-respect. I mean, when I do it, it just sounds like, you know, I sound like an old lady when I do it. But you're accurate.
Yeah.
You get it right.
Well, I was actually watching Mulaney yesterday. It had been a while. But Bob, when it comes to open toe, what human being wants to walk on the street and their first thought is, I need some male toenail. That's what's going to make my day better. Hooray! There's a toenail.
Can I jump in with this? Some people say there shouldn't even be a horse in the hospital, but we're way past that now, people.
So good.
I think I might have thrown that out just to give you an excuse to Mulaney. Okay, I got a couple of legit sports questions, okay?
Yeah.
Marner and Liljegren to Columbus for Seth Jones and a decent prospect. Would you do it?
Can we change the adjective from decent to good prospect?
No, because I think really like Liljegren at this point is a decent prospect. And so what it really becomes is, you know, do you consider Jones and Marner at this stage in their careers to be worth a swap with the chance that someone could come along and be better?
Yeah, I would have to stall for a second. And all it is I need to see what Seth Jones is. I apologize. I forget what his contract status is right now.
Well, he's going to need to be re-signed.
Let's see. Seth Jones. It's a tough one. Like, my first instinct is to say yes, just because I feel like, you know, the Leafs need to. Okay, so he's got 1 year left at $5.4 million. That's coming up next year. 26 years old, March 25th, and then you get that. I don't know. I'm kind of leaning a little bit towards no. And I think I don't know.
I'm going to lean towards no, although I think they should think about it. But here's the one thing that makes me not close that door altogether. If you bring Jones in, that means you can trade Morgan Riley, which means you get that cap money back and you don't have to worry about re-signing him for nothing.
Right.
He can play left D and he can anchor your number one. Like, it can be, they can have a hell of a defense with Muzzin and Seth Jones on the left side. Plus now all of a sudden Riley becomes expendable. And whatever offense you lose with Marner, you're never going to get back entirely. But with that $6 or $7 million, you can get a lot. So you got to think about, it's not just Jones and a prospect. If it's Jones a prospect, you trade Marner, you don't lose anything on the defense. You trade Riley, you don't lose anything on the defense. And you've got some money to play with to help support your forward core.
Yeah.
And that's why it's sort of, this is the game, right? This is the game. It's not just salary for salary. But it's like, what other options does that now open up for the Leafs?
Yeah, no, you're right.
I'm not sure I would still do it. You know,
what's that? But
I said I'm still not sure I would do it because I feel like Marner's going to be 90 to 100 points for the next few years. And it's really, really, really hard to replace that. But if they're so bloody top heavy that it makes them beatable, again, going back to the Tampa conversation and how balanced they are and how many good players they have, like, we've learned, you just can't win with great players on top and shit players on the bottom.
Yep.
Like, you might win a round or two, but you're not winning four rounds. You're going to run into a team that's better than you. Plus, that money might go to a goalie, right? Because I want to start this wagon now, which is I'm not on Jack Campbell's side. I'm not against them. I hope it works out. But just watching how Carey Price has played and how Vasilevskiy has played, I'm like, you don't need a decent goalie. You need an excellent goalie to win a cup. Which takes me to my next question. You ready for this? You can have one classic player from the Leafs on the roster next year. This is someone from the past at their peak, just mysteriously, magically transported from their peak in the past to the 2021 roster. Who would you choose?
Doug Gilmore.
Interesting. Thoughts? I thought about Gilmore.
Because he produced in the playoffs. And just, I mean, it's one of the greatest individual seasons, you know, like 92 and 93 here that we've ever seen. So you're going to get the leadership check. You're going to get the toughness check. You're going to get playoff bona fides check. And he can be out there helping your offense when, you know, if Marner's not getting it done, and, you know, a good defensive forward as well. So I go with Doug Gilmore.
Gilmore was number three for me.
Ooh, three.
I thought long and hard about Wendell, a tough left winger that hits and scores and gives the forward the top six some balance on the left side. Could create a hell of a line. You're not worried about Zach Hyman if you got Wendell Clark on the wing. But you know who I decided to go with? I went with Ed Belfour.
I knew you were going to say that because we're talking goalies. All right, done with Eddie.
Because I feel like not only is at his peak, was he, you know, he's a Hall of Fame goalie, but they've always had these goalies. It's like, oh, he's so nice. Everybody loves him, you know, tap the pads. Hey, no problem. Ed Belfour maybe needs to whip these guys into shape, where it's sort of like he just takes like a crumpled up coffee cup and whips it at Mitch's head and says, don't F up. Like, maybe, you know, like maybe they need a switch of pace. You know, they got to get away from Kooky But Friendly Freddy or Jack Campbell, I Can't Apologize Enough. Maybe they need the I'm Scared Shitless of Eddie in that. Mm-hmm. And he, when he says, I'm not going to mess up, and doesn't, it's like, oh, okay. Accountability from the net out. I kind of like Eddie Belfour.
I'm not going to argue. You would certainly feel a lot safer. You would feel comfortable in a tight game in elimination that, you know, he's not going to give up that goal.
I got the same question, but for the Jays. If you could take any classic Jays team, like player, and put them on this roster right now, who would you pick?
Easy. Roy okay. Halladay.
Interesting. You went with starting pitching. Yeah, I thought about either Halladay or Clemens.
And with Roy... And you could do, I'm just not going to do Roger. I'm going to do our own homegrown. Sure. I'm going to do Roy, because not only is it a starting pitcher, but it's a guy going to go, he's going to go seven innings on a bad day. So he's going to help your bullpen as well.
It's all good. It's all good. I love it. I thought about starting pitching. I almost had it in this morning. I changed it up and I thought, you know what? No, they just need someone in the bullpen that they can trust, because so many of these freaking games are getting lost in the eighth and ninth or in extra innings, you know? So I'm going to go with one of my faves from when I was a kid. The Terminator.
Ah.
Tom Hanke.
Yeah.
Do you remember how much fun it was when he trotted out there with his glasses and his incredible fastball? And he'd set everyone down. You're like, yeah, no one can beat us. I just want that feeling again, where it's like my starting pitchers know, you know what? We got it covered on the back end. I just got to go out and do my job. You know, yeah. I don't need to win 11-1.
Also, I remember my dad had a record, the Tom Hanke record, when they did the song.
Terminator.
Yeah. In 1985, that was high entertainment. That was all the entertainment we had. It's like, guys, did you hear? Tom Hanke and the Jays, they've got an album. Get a record. It's one song. It's 3.5 minutes. That's going to entertain us for the whole summer.
I remember going to Johnny Bauer's house with Strombo so we could interview him for a pilot we were making. And we talked to him about his song, Honky the Christmas Goose. And yep. I stress this, there can't be enough songs made by athletes. End of story for me.
Yes.
By the way, your answer is the right one. Mine is totally sentimental. Your answer is absolutely the right one. I got some Jay's wines that I'd like to run past you, if you don't mind.
We will end it with this, as we are 53 minutes in.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. Good. Okay. So a Jordan Romano wine. So basically a good wine from a bad region.
A good wine from a bad region. Oh, that one's because I always would say this is so lame, Bob. There's no such thing as bad regions. There's only bad producers.
Okay, we'll just
move on. Wait. Okay, no. Okay, no. I'm still going to give you an answer. English sparkling wine. The only reason England is making more wine, is because a little bit of climate change. So that kind of makes it a bad region from a big picture climate standpoint. But there's really good sparkling wine from England. So I'll go an English sparkling wine.
That's actually an excellent answer. You went from the outhouse to the penthouse in about 15 seconds. That was great.
Yeah. I hated my first answer.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't one. Marcus Simeon, a wine region that's maybe a little bit overlooked because it's literally next door to a more exciting one.
I will go. Let's see. So the obvious answer is Gamay, which is just south of Burgundy. And it's the same grape, Pinot Noir, for their reds. But Beaujolais really isn't overlooked, as you know. I mean, we talk about it. We talk about it all the time. So you know what I'm going to go with, Bob? I'm going to go with a little more specific. I'm going to go with white Bordeaux. When you think of Bordeaux, like Lafite, Latour, you always think of red wine and Cabernet and Merlot and Petit Verdot and all that. No one drinks white Bordeaux. It's fantastic. A Sauvignon Blanc Sauvignon sort of a blend. So Marcus Simeon is a white Bordeaux.
Vladdy Guerrero, a wine that has burst on the scene and has taken the wine world by storm. This can be a specific maker, someone that has just burst on the scene and everyone is talking about.
Ooh, what has burst on the scene recently? You know, the whole natural wine movement, orange wine, even though, let's face it, orange wine is kind of trash. People are really liking growers, champagne. I kind of want to give a different answer here. This one's going to be, you know what, Bob? I'm going to give my Tom Hankey answer. This is going to be my sentimental one, just because I went and visited the area. Hawke's Bay, North Island on New Zealand. Hawke's Bay, Syrah, Hawke's Bay, you know, not even just Syrah, they're Bordeaux blends. So I'm going back to Bordeaux a second time, but I'm going to go Hawke's Bay, Syrah. Really awesome.
Now, for the record, I don't understand anything you said, but people who drink wine would, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Just checking. Okay. Yeah. And last one here, and it's the George Springer wine, a wine that you paid a ton for, but you're going to keep it on the shelf and not open it because it's just not ready yet.
Well,
I have a suggestion here. Can I jump in with something?
Go.
It's port.
Mm,
You leave it for 25 years because in 25 years, it's going to have amazing value. But if you drank it right now, it would probably be okay.
Love it. Let's go with yours. Absolutely. Good. A good vintage port, Bob. 100%.
I've got an 11 and a half year old port in my cabinet because Charlotte's 11 and a half and someone gifted us a port, a $20 bottle of port. And they said, look, you got to understand, open this when she's 25 or sell it when she's 25, because this stuff isn't really particularly valuable now, but it over time, it really, really picks up value and deliciousness. So 100%. That's my one thing that I'm doing. I wish I had done this with so many of my comics, you know, X-Men 137, Daredevil 181. I had the Frank Miller Wolverine limited series. These things are worth hundreds of bucks now, but not mine because Opal ate them.
Ah, you beat me to the joke. Goodbye, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.